This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, we can fire it up again. It is Monday night. I am the boss, David Gao, sitting next to the Gloss, Carla Dawson. Carla, welcome in.
Good to be here.
And we've got Jose behind the glass. Jose, you looking live tonight?
Yes, sir. I have noticed Carla's not wearing her black and silver star pants today.
You did notice. You know why, Jose?
I was hoping to see them make a comeback.
I know, me too. I'm afraid the outfit's not coming out again this season.
She wears black and silver whenever the Raiders win, but that was not this weekend as the Raiders fell.
To the Ravens.
Yeah, and Lamar Jackson, who's looking
pretty
impressive. With the rookie
quarterback, looks fantastic.
Yeah, he can run that ball.
He can run that ball like a running back. It's not like he's just a dual threat quarterback. If they actually slotted him as a running back,
yep,
he can move like that.
Yeah. No, he could be a slot receiver.
Good.
He could do a lot.
He'd be a great slot receiver.
But he wants to be quarterback, and it would seem that the Ravens are going to pick him to be their starter for the rest of the season.
Is that what you think's happening?
Over Joe Flacco. I think that's coming. Flacco coming back from a hip injury may be available, but I don't think it matters. I think they're going to have Jackson
as the quarterback.
Watch your
back, Flacco. When you were out, big things are happening.
Big things happen. Now, big things are happening in Houston, Texas tonight,
yeah,
from which, the city from which we broadcast. The Texans with a big matchup against the Titans. This is an important divisional matchup. It is home here in Houston, and on really an important night, or a special night here in the city, as we remember Bob McNair, the owner of the Texans, who passed away this week. He's a guy who brought football back to the city after the Oilers left town a long time ago.
So the Texans bring that kind of emotion and a 7-game winning streak to face division rivals Tennessee. And former coach of the Texans, you know, defensive coordinator Mike Vrabel, leading up the Titans. So, here we go.
Many connections on this. The Texans, after winning 7 in a row, you know, they started the season 0-3. They won 7 in a row. They stand 7 wins, 3 losses. Titans 5-5, 2 games back. And if the Texans can win tonight, it might be a knockout punch for the division.
They need some revenge. They lost to the Titans in week 2 and never should have lost.
All right, when we come back, we're going to get to visit with Fox Sports analyst Chris Myers, and we will ask him if this will be Mike McCarthy's last season as the head coach of the Green Bay Packers. It'll be Chris Myers when we return, the Boss and the Gloss, SB Nation Radio.
Guys, the holidays are quickly approaching. Don't wait until the last minute to get a gift. Head over to giftingmap.com today. Giftingmap.com. This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Joining us now is Fox Sports expert Chris Myers. Chris, thanks so much for being here on SB Nation Radio.
Yeah, it's good to be on with you. We're all sports. I guess everybody's kind of an expert when it comes to talking sports from our point of view.
Hey, you're an expert in our mind.
Well, I appreciate it. It's a lot to carry around, but I'll take it.
Well, I want to begin with the big game that you're going to be calling this weekend, Green Bay and Arizona. Boy, a lot is going on in Green Bay. It seems like the Sharks are circling Mike McCarthy at risk. How do you assess the Packers right now?
Yeah, I'm disappointed. I mean, their road record, they usually can win a few or steal a few games. Last night was, boy, they just didn't look sharp, and they had opportunities to beat the Vikings and increase their playoff chances. Now, to win enough to get to the playoffs, they have to win out their remaining 5 games. I looked at the schedule. That's all doable, but they just have to get healthier. Last night, they were missing a key starter on the defensive line, a linebacker in the secondary. They didn't have Randall Cobb. Their offensive line, you saw injuries go in and out. See, these are all excuses that all teams deal with injuries, but usually, you know, Aaron Rodgers will pull out a miracle somehow, some way, and he wasn't able to do that, and he hasn't in a few of the games this year. But anytime you have Rodgers, especially this week, they're at home with Arizona, and then I think they get Atlanta at home. I think those are games the Packers should win and keep their hopes alive. You know, I remember, and they referred to it, 2016, counted out, got on a run, and then upset some people in the playoffs. I don't know if this team team is strong enough around Aaron Rodgers to do that.
Do you think Mike McCarthy is the head coach of the Packers next year?
If I had the lean right now, I would say no. I would say the vibe is going, and even if they do squeeze into the playoffs, there have been some changes in the front office, and I think it might depend on who they think they can get to bring in. But I'm leaning, and there may be other opportunities for Mike McCarthy if he's out in Green Bay. But he's been there a dozen years through the whole time, one Super Bowl title. I'm leaning, and I don't have any inside information yet. I haven't really spent some time up in Green Bay, and I will this week. But it just doesn't look right. And I know Aaron Rodgers has taken the high road and been professional, but I just get the sense sometimes that those two, and they work so closely together, they're not exactly in sync sometimes as how that offense should run.
Chris, and another team this weekend that looks to me like they're not in sync and they teeter-totter from one week to the next is the Steelers. And I'm looking at Big Ben. Are they the quarterback that can take them to the next level? You know, you look at him, and I think of him as one of the elite, and then you see that he's leading the NFL in red zone interceptions, and last night's was crucial. Is this what's separating him from the Bradys and the Rodgers, that conversation? And can they go all the way with him?
Yeah, I think they can go all the way with him, and I think the Steelers' defense has kind of been the problem the last couple of years, and we know what they went through with Le'Veon Bell. Yeah, the red zone interception is a great point. That's really shocking because we were just talking about Aaron Rodgers. He's thrown like one interception this year with all of the passing attempts and all of the injuries and adjustments. So, yeah, there's that risk-reward, and that's something I'm not sure why. And we had done a Steeler game earlier in the year and got some time with Ben, and at that time he was trying to iron out the Antonio Brown connection, which has since come back. So I think what really hurt the Steelers, and losing on the road, they lose that key spot for the two seed in the playoffs at the moment. If they, you know, and I think they're going to get in for sure to the postseason, but being able to play at home or get a first round bye so important, especially for a team like the Steelers. I don't know that Ben, and we could break it down, those red zone interceptions, there probably aren't many of those that come when they play in Pittsburgh. They're usually on the road and in different situations. So yes, I think they can beat a team like Kansas City in the playoffs. Could they beat a New England? Could they beat a Houston, some of the other teams, the Texans who are on a roll? It's a good question. I think if their defense plays well, I'm a believer in their run game without Bell. And I think Ben in the playoffs is a guy who can. He's got a couple of Super Bowl rings, so I think he can make that. He can overcome some of those mistakes that you referenced in the red zone.
We're talking to Fox Sports analyst Chris Myers. So, Chris, you mentioned the Texans. It's interesting, we're broadcasting out of Houston, and though the season is going well and they got seven straight wins, there is a feeling that the Texans really don't have that much upside. What do you think holds the Texans back?
Well, probably a strong running game, a dominant running game. And I know this is a passing league, and maybe a compliment to DeAndre Hopkins would be the other part of that, because we know he is certainly one of the best receivers in the game with Julio Jones, and you'd put him right up there, Antonio Brown. But he's one guy, and somebody else, you know, in the offense, and I know they've tried and they've had their share of injuries, but obviously a healthy Deshaun Watson. I know there's some people around the league that say, hey, is Bill O'Brien, you know, is that, was he in trouble or not? But this year, after the 0-3 start going on the tear, I think this is a team that can lean on its defense. I think the Texans, healthy, they're healthy enough in the secondary. They have probably, along with the Bears, maybe the best defenses in the game going, and can adjust to teams, and that's important once you get into the playoffs, although you need to be able to score points. So I think part of it, too, is, in fairness to the Texans, just I think everybody says, when they do get in, you know, they lose. It's kind of like the Kansas City Chiefs. Even if they're at home, they get into the playoffs, they're gonna lose. But both Kansas City and Houston, these are different teams this year, the way they're playing, and certainly the play of their quarterback.
Well, we'll see tonight against their division rivals, one of the division rivals in Tennessee. Chris, can I switch gears for a minute? Because I notice you have a really cool first and last, and I would love to ask you about this.
She's been talking about this all afternoon, Chris.
Okay.
Here it comes.
So, Chris, I see that you were the first one to interview O.J. Simpson live after his criminal and civil lawsuits, and then you got the last public interview with John Wooden before he passed away. Can you give us some insight and glimpses into those two men and those two interviews? It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I could go on, you know, for hours, and if we have time someday, I will. There's so much behind the scenes to both of these, who, and they're extreme opposites of the kinds of people you would want to be around and even have on this earth. I mean, John Wooden is, you know, kind of the Mother Teresa of sports. If he's so full of wisdom, you know, his Abraham Lincoln quotes and references, not only the way that he coached, but the way he dealt with people. And he knew, and I'll start with him because he was one of my favorite people. In 99, he knew his health, and I asked him about, there were a couple of other close times in his life in the military where he flirted with death, but if he feared death, and he said no, and I'm paraphrasing, but the line was something to the effect of, because I think the life after this one will be even better, and this one hasn't been all that bad. It was that kind of pleasant, positive approach from him, that always stick with me. But the other side, you know, certainly O.J. Simpson, who had watched the show, the interview show that we did, and I got to tell you, I it was just fascinating because I did the research for this, and there was no way that he could not have committed the crime. It's still amazing to me that a jury didn't find him guilty, but he was in such denial when we did this interview, so out of touch, and we were doing it live. That was his one request. He said, he had two. He said, I want to do the interview live, because he turned down Barbara Walters because she wouldn't do it live. She wanted to tape it, and he said, the other one is, I don't want you to ask about my children. And I thought, well, that was fair enough, because we're gonna talk about the trial and what went on and his ex-wife and that type of thing. But we were talking, it was one thing that stood out to me, that, you know, live in this interview, we had to take a break at a certain amount of time, and I just was showing pictures of how she was, you know, attacked, and as soon as we hit the break, he turns to me and said something like, you know, hey, I got a tee time out at Riviera Country Club, and we have an opening and a foursome if you want to join us to play golf next week. And so it just struck me, and that was right off the air after we hit the break, between things, that this guy is in total denial and out of touch with what went on. So anyway, that's kind of in a nutshell, and I could go on and on. If you have specific questions, I'll be glad to answer them. But of all the people I've interviewed through the years in many different ways, that is interesting when you break it down that way, because the very first interview I ever did as a youngster in radio was Muhammad Ali, and at the time didn't realize he was the greatest and how cool he was. And his line to me was, you know, you don't look as dumb as you look, when I got to ask a question, which always stuck with me. It was in the 70s. I was a kid with long hair and a big tape recorder and that type of thing. So through the years, I've kind of really enjoyed the kind of personality of winners, losers, coaches, players. But the O.J. one was far off the map because it was beyond sports, and it was one that people talked about, yeah, for weeks. Jay Leno joked about it. It was on the newscast and that type of thing. But John Wooden is the kind of guy you'd want as your grandparent or as your coach, or you'd want your kid or relative to be coached by him.
Well, it's so fascinating, Chris, because how you talk about O.J. explains exactly why a jury got him off. I mean, he's obviously convinced himself that this didn't happen, and he's so charismatic, he's convinced a lot of other people, which is fascinating. But flipping over to USC, his alma mater, what are you thinking about? Lynn Swann has made it very public to the USC fan base, we're keeping Clay Helton. He is our guy. Do you agree with that decision, and how do you feel about Lynn Swann's stance?
Yeah, I like Clay Helton and have been around him. I don't know, and it's not a knock. I think he did a good job for when he took over the program, but I think they're ready for the next level. And what I hear, even from when Lynn Swann, or if you go back to Pat Hayden, when they make some of these decisions, they talk about, well, we want a guy who's part of, you know, knows the USC culture and the USC program. Sometimes you got to go beyond that. You got to go outside the box. I mean, think about when they brought in Pete Carroll, and it looked like, who was a rejected NFL coach. Well, what are they doing here? And then he, of course, built up the program, and there have been issues since. So I think there's a lot of bright young head coaches out there in college that could use the advantages that USC has from tradition to where they're recruiting from, and take the program to great heights. I think, yeah, it was a rough year, but Clay Helton losing to Chip Kelly in UCLA, to me, might have been, I thought, the dagger that said, okay, we have to make the move. So I think that this is a Clay Helton make or break year. I wouldn't have gone with, well, it depends who you want to bring in and who you have out there, what kind of decisions Lynn Swann and USC wants to make in that that direction. But going forward, I think basically that's what they're saying. Clay, you got to get it done now, or we are going to go in a different direction. So maybe the guy they wanted or the next guy, and they got to be thinking about that now. And if they're not, then I think they're making a mistake.
I think Clay Helton is really happy his season didn't end at UCLA, and who would have thought they would look so good against Notre Dame. And Brian Kelly being in that same position where Notre Dame fans were calling for his release in 2016, and they kept him on, and look what happened, is a little bit of kismet for Clay Helton. So maybe
that's a great point. And he did. But USC is not a program that you ought to be given credit for hanging in there with. You know, I mean, that Notre Dame USC, that used to be against the teams that were, you know, battling for in the top 10 in the country or something. So, but Brian Kelly, that's a name I have heard, believe whether he's interested or not. I've heard some NFL owners or ownership decision makers talking about, you know, we haven't seen a lot of that dipping back into college to coach in the NFL since Chip Kelly. So it's an interesting point that you bring up. I don't know whether he'd want to do that or not, but certainly I have heard Kelly's name. And yes, they're in a hurry to run people out of town. I think of Doug Peterson with the Eagles, who after his first season, which was not a winning season, that they wanted, Philadelphia wanted him out, and what a mistake. And all of a sudden he comes back and wins the Super Bowl the next year, even with the injuries at quarterback, and is in a tough spot this year, but won a big game yesterday. So I think, you know, and that's where the decision makers have to understand the guy they have in that position. Stability is very important.
You can hear him on Fox Sports. He's Chris Myers. Chris, thanks so much for joining here, a boss on the gloss of SB Nation Radio.
All right. My pleasure. You guys enjoy.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Carl, I do want to remind you to go to your O'Reilly Auto Parts store and take care of your car.
I'm on it.
O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. So we've got the Texans and the Titans in a big showdown here in Houston. 3-0 now, Titans on top in the first quarter. And an emotional day, perhaps, for the Texans playing at home right after Bob McNair's passing early this week. Of course, Bob McNair, the owner of the Texans, he's the one who brought the Texans to Houston and really enabled Houston to have a professional football franchise again.
In the post-Oilers era.
Many people really lost their hearts to the Oilers. Oilers under Bum Phillips, that era, the Love You Blue era. It was a golden era in the Houston football scene. But, of course, Bud Adams moved the team to Tennessee. They became the Titans. And the team here, Houston, a great, great football town, was without a team until Bob McNair got the Texans for this city. And he will be remembered for that for a long, long time.
And there's even more ties now currently with the former defensive coordinator for the Texans, Mike Vrabel.
Yep.
Now coaching the Tennessee Titans.
Right.
And well, there's an axe to grind, because do you remember in week two, the Titans handed the Texans one of their three losses to start the season at 0-3. But if you remember that game, Tennessee was without two of their key offensive tackles. They lost Mariota mid-game, put in Blaine Gabbert. They were outgained by 154 yards, and they won 20-17.
Yeah, that went down as a really devastating loss for the Texans. A division loss in a game they really should have won. And
I was hopeless.
They were on a path to 0-3. There were calls for O'Brien's head. Well, here we sit. Texans now 7-3 with seven straight wins. They've overcome the loss of Will Fuller. They seemingly are on a good track right now.
Right, so hopefully we'll see a little more Demaryius Thomas tonight. That'd be nice. Oh, Tennessee scored. Darn. So now it's 9-0 right now, Tennessee over Houston.
Yeah, 61-yard touchdown reception to Jonnu Smith. So that puts the Titans on top, 9-0 with the extra point looming. We shall see a big night here in Houston. It was a big night. It was a great night for Minnesota over Green Bay last night. Kirk Cousins, to me, his best game as a Viking.
By far.
When you consider the whole of it, the stage, the showdown against Aaron Rodgers, and frankly, the magnitude of that game, both the Vikings and the Packers came into the game with almost a must-win scenario, and the Vikings prevailed, a great, great win. Vikings on top over Green Bay 24-17.
And Cousins' numbers, 342 yards, three touchdowns. Of course, he has helped by having Adam Thielen as one of his main targets. It's his ninth game with over 100-plus yards receiving. He had 125 last night. That's incredible.
He's fun to watch because he's not the biggest guy on the field. He's not the fastest guy on the field. He just knows how to maneuver on the field very, very well.
Well, he had an outstanding season last year as well. I really felt like that's where he came on the map, and he has just continued right where he left off. He's impressive.
Now, did you see him even as well as he played on the field? There was that moment.
He was a stick.
He was a stick. He was the human limbo, right?
That was
the
amazing.
The touchdown celebration, Cook make the touchdown, they come, they wave everybody over, and they lift up Thielen, and everybody does a limbo underneath his body.
And that was Dalvin Cook's first touchdown, right? His first NFL touchdown?
An incredible run by Cook.
Just to tear down the fourth wall here, that's what we do to prep the show. We make two interns, well, actually three interns make a limbo, and the three of us kind of do a little limbo before we get ready for the show.
I like it.
Yeah, the only problem is I don't bend very well. I don't get under the limbo stick, but Carla, I mean, you
I
should
I can bend
see
it like Beckham.
She can bend it like Beckham.
It's my former gymnast in me.
Well, a fantastic win for the Vikings. It might just be the end of the Mike McCarthy era in Green Bay. Great visit with Chris Myers last segment. He's pessimistic about McCarthy's future. But really, when you look at what's happened, the whole yield productivity of the Aaron Rodgers era in Green Bay, there's a great deal of frustration. You can feel the tension. I think McCarthy's in trouble.
I do think McCarthy's in trouble. And honestly, after last night, I thought the Packers seemed done, because for them to be eligible for the playoffs, they have to win their next five, their last five. They can do it. I mean, you take a look at that schedule, they're able to do it. I don't think it's going to happen. And it's because Rodgers doesn't have enough personnel around him that can do it. Here's the good news. If you're a Green Bay fan, there will now be much needed wholesale changes. And it just might start with Mike McCarthy.
Yeah. But and what a foundation they'll have to build on. They'll start with Aaron Rodgers.
They locked him up. He's the highest paid quarterback, and he deserves to be. And you know what? Let's also just give him some props, and we'll get into more later.
Yeah.
He has so much reason to just go off when the media talks to him.
Yep.
About, you know, the play calling, everything that's going on in the organization, not enough pieces around him, and he is class personified. And these little young guns that got mouths, OBJ, need to take a look from the best quarterback, in my opinion, in the NFL and how he handles adversity.
All right, well, let's look at OBJ and the Giants. They had a great first half. They were in control. They were on their way to beating the defending champion Eagles, and then everything unraveled. What took place?
They became the Giants. They can't help themselves.
And OBJ was mad. I mean, he was vocal after the game. He called out everybody, said there was a bad game plan. He is not reluctant to share his opinion.
No, and you know, I do believe OBJ is right. I'm going to go ahead and say that. In what he said. It was a very confusing, head-scratching second half. You look, it was absolutely the tale of two halves. It was all New York in the first half. And the Giants led 19-3 in the second quarter. And it became all Philadelphia in the second half. And if you look at the production of Saquon Barkley, who was so dynamic in the first half, he had, do you know how many touches in the second half?
Tell me.
Cinco, baby.
Five touches.
He should have five touches in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, you got to feed him the ball. That's
why
a
do
mistake.
You change a winning formula?
I
mean, even so, I thought, well, maybe he's injured.
Yeah, he's their best offensive player.
By far.
Feed him the ball. And OBJ
wants
the ball more.
And OBJ the same, too.
Right.
I just don't love the public forum. That's, you know, I think that you look at Eli Manning, who is really the leader of this team.
Right.
You never hear him say an unkind word.
Right.
Call out his coaches, call out other players. He is not having a great year, and that's a fact. But I do not love OBJ taking everything to the public. Do you think that's okay?
Well, no, you go OBJ. You've got Greg Olsen of the Panthers yesterday mouthing off about the game plan there. Jalen Ramsey just about every week has a
DJ Swearinger.
DJ Swearinger. And when they do it now, it's really a phenomenon that's almost more commonplace today than ever I can remember. They're always criticizing effectively the coach, the direction, the scheme. It's a very difficult window for these coaches. They've got players who feel very empowered.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't like it. It's not a good look.
It is interesting as we sit here and watch the Texans on the screen. When the Texans were 0-3, the media, lots of folks, were calling for Bill O'Brien's head.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't hear the same noise out. There was not an OBJ-type voice in that Texans locker room. When the Cowboys were 3-5, Dez Bryant wasn't there. it didn't seem to matter. There was nobody screaming to the hinterlands that the coaching was wrong, that the scheme was wrong. There wasn't that same sort of vocal negativity coming out of the locker room.
Take your tips from Texas. They both started out with diversity. I mean, adversity.
A lot of adversity, you bet.
For the Texans and the Cowboys.
So. All right, when we come back, we're going to ask the Gloss, in the feud between Baker Mayfield and Hugh Jackson, who's right? We'll dive deeply into the Browns, all things yesterday.
Guys, the holidays are quickly approaching. Don't wait until the last minute to get a gift. Head over to giftingmap.com today. Giftingmap.com. This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
All right, joining us now on the Bet DSI guest line is none other than Jake the Snake Assman, who is on the ground at the game between the Texans and the Titans. Jake, tell us what's going on.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me. So Texans just were able to get on the board. They trimmed 10-0 early in this game. Tennessee Titans, on their opening drive right down the field, Jonnu Smith, who's emerged as a second-year tight end, took a pass from Marcus Mariota, basically untouched, and ran the ball 50-plus yards down the field. So Tennessee had the early lead. They tacked on a field goal on their opening drive, I should say. So that was the Texans, or the, excuse me, the Titans' second possession of the game. But the Houston Texans just responded with a nice drive. Lamar Miller ate the Titans' defense up. He had runs of 21, 1, 12, and 15 yards. In total, the Texans had a 7-play, 62-yard drive that lasted about 4 minutes of game clock time here in the first quarter. It ended when Deshaun Watson found Demaryius Thomas in the back right corner of the end zone. So Demaryius Thomas just scored his first touchdown as a member of the Houston Texans. A big response by the Texans offense after trailing 10-0. About to kick the ball back to the Tennessee Titans here. So the score is 10-7. Tennessee is leading the Texans with 5:21 to go here in the first quarter. Before the game tonight, there was a moment of silence for Bob McNair, the former owner, of course, of the Houston Texans, who passed away over the weekend.
That's Jake Assman on the ground here in Houston. Thanks so much for joining us, Jake. So interesting. It's really a great thing for the Texans that Demaryius Thomas is on the board. They really need a number two receiver to offset DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, they really
and
need a
loss compliment. Of Will Fuller.
And the loss of Will Fuller. They had with Fuller almost the perfect offset because Fuller could stretch the field. Hopkins is exceptional at catching the ball in traffic. But with Fuller out, Texans made the trade for Thomas, and he's been working his way into the offense, but it's hard to make an impact overnight.
Right, and it's a complicated offense, and they've given him time. I love that they haven't just thrown him out there. And the other nice thing about not having a lot of game tape on him with the Texans, it's hard to plan for him.
Yep.
So, love that he got the first touchdown for in his Texans career. Congratulations.
All right, so 10-7 the score. Titans on top right now. But let's go back to this extraordinary turn of events there with the Bengals and Browns. This was an interesting game because, of course, you've got Baker Mayfield and company facing Hugh Jackson on the other side. Jackson, of course, the former coach of the Browns who's gone to the Bengals and is serving as a member on that staff. And you could feel a lot of tension in the building, and there were a lot of tension in the comments afterward.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
Why is he with the Bengals? Why did he go there? Did he go there on his own will?
Hugh Jackson was fired.
He was fired. Fired.
And he deserved to be fired, by the way.
Yes, because of three numbers. 3, 36, and 1.
That's a tough
over
record.
Over 2-plus seasons.
Yeah.
And yes, the Browns did the right thing by firing him. They should have fired him really after year one when they were 1-15. Then they went 0-16. Why they kept him, I don't know. But
well, as we've said, the one big mistake John Dorsey made in the offseason was keeping Hugh Jackson. It looks like his draft picks are playing pretty well. Both Mayfield and Ward, the number one and number four mm-hmm. pick overall, they really have been good rookie contributors. But he kept Hugh Jackson, and now he's finally fired him and inserted Greg Williams. Jackson, though, now serving on the Bengals.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, this
apparently Baker Mayfield is not, however.
Okay, and I have a problem with that.
Yes?
I have a real problem with that. Why would you call out a coach, okay? So his basic beef that I understood it, and you tell me if you got something different from it.
You want me to speak for Baker Mayfield?
I do, because you love Baker Mayfield.
I've been a fan of Baker.
So give us the
record. Out of the morning, closet. I'm feeling pretty dangerous.
Mr. Gal wakes up every morning and feels dangerous.
That's right.
I do.
I walk into the studio and I feel you two are dangerous.
No doubt.
That's what I can say.
But you've got a comment here about Baker.
Yeah, I don't like him calling out his coach, his old coach, like that. And the reason he called him out,
yes,
was not, coach, you were terrible and now I'm good that you're gone. It was, how dare you go to the Bengals, you know, our in-state rival. How
right.
dare you go to a competitor? What?
Well, his premise was, look, you asked us to play for you 1 week and now you go across the street and play for a team or coach a team that we're going to have to face twice.
And here's the reason.
Yes.
It's really hard to get a job in the NFL.
Yes.
Really hard.
Right.
As a minority, it's extra hard to get a job in the NFL. And when you're 3-36-1, you're not really top of the priority list. So if someone, this is terrible, but if someone is crazy enough to offer him a job, take it.
Right.
I would take it.
Right.
And honestly, Baker, if you really feel that Hugh Jackson was fired for a reason and you look at that record and see that he really was, and that the Browns were terrible with him, you should feel no threat. You should not be one bit worried. In fact, you should almost celebrate that he's with the Bengals. Do you really think he's going to help that franchise?
Well, since Hugh Jackson has left, Baker Mayfield has, well, the Browns are 2-1, which is good for the Browns, and Baker Mayfield's passer rating is up at
That's
about
great.
129, second only to Drew Brees in the last 3 weeks. So
what's he complaining about?
No, things are actually pretty good
for
him.
He looks like an idiot. Like, he needs to stop.
He is a guy who made his own transition in college. He
Thank
went from one
you.
Team to another rival team, a team he had to come back and play.
Both in the Big 12.
Right.
He left Texas Tech because he didn't like that Cliff Kingsbury, now former coach of Texas Tech, didn't like that Cliff Kingsbury wasn't using him right. So he went to a main rival in the Big 12, OU.
Right.
So Baker Mayfield is talking out of both sides of his mouth, and he's not doing what I say, not what I do. I don't like it.
He looks
foolish.
You and Baker, you just never understood
him. We're not mano a mano.
She never liked Baker Mayfield. Am I right about this?
Yeah, it seems like that's the case. I don't know what he did to you. Did he do something to you, Carla? Did he make fun of your pants?
Never.
No, but guess what? My Raiders handed him a big fat L. And when you lose to the Raiders this season, ouch.
Yeah.
So I don't love it. I don't love all these players, you know, throwing their coaches under the bus
right.
in front of the media. And here he's throwing a former coach. Not only that, but you had the visual of Hugh Jackson really post-game where the Bengals got killed by the Browns, making his way to Baker to congratulate him. And Baker wouldn't accept a hug and stuck a hand out. Ew.
Yeah,
I don't like it.
There is a role for a gracious winner. It's a lost art, I guess.
Yeah, you're right, and it's really frustrating. I'm a big Baker fan, like Mr. Gal. Sorry, Carla.
That's okay.
But
he showed
maturity in the fact that he threw four touchdowns, but he showed his age by his
Thank
behavior
you.
In the post. In the post, it was kind of frustrating. As much of a Baker Mayfield fan as I am, it was just. It's almost like, dude, shut up! Like, what are you doing? Like, at the end of the day, this is their jobs, and Hugh has every right to go get a job.
That's right. He didn't say, I'm going to leave you Browns now. He was cut. His booty was sent out of there. But I let you know, Jose, I appreciate your candor because it's easy to be. I'm a good homer. Like, I like my people. I'm loyal. And I really can appreciate Baker Mayfield's talent and the things I just want to tell him. Baker, you're on top of the world right now. Like, cut it. This is
you're
the
doing
time to
better.
Start.
Yes, you're doing better without him. Take the high road.
So, right. It's bad optics. But I think you're right. It does highlight his immaturity. I mean, it just kind of is continuing on from all the junk he did at OU, grabbing his crotch against Kansas. You know, big football powerhouse, right? We're all worried about Kansas.
He should have done it against somebody else.
Jeez-o.
Is that what you're saying?
It's not necessary. He's got to control. I love competitiveness. And if he said all this to let the Browns know, like, hey, I'm your guy. I got the city. We don't bow down to Cincinnati. Like, okay, I can sort of appreciate that. But you're actually super immature and it sounds dumb.
Maybe there's something else we don't know about this. Because after all, he didn't start the season. Tyrod's the quarterback to start the season. Maybe there's something behind closed doors that was said or that was done that Baker holds such a grudge against him.
Against Hugh Jackson.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, it also said, just listening to the gloss there, Jose, do not put your hand down around your crotch. Let's just leave it at that, okay? You do not want to pull a Baker Mayfield.
I won't. I think you're good.
Blue emu for all. Is what I'm saying.
Moving to another young quarterback, Lamar Jackson has really come on and fired up this Ravens offense. Very interesting to see Joe Flacco, of course, with the hip injury. Jackson's come on. He's really moved the ball well, really using his legs and running the ball exceptionally well. Jacksonville fell to Buffalo, but the Ravens are winners with Lamar Jackson, and that's really
two in a row.
It's a real step up for that team. I don't think Flacco will start again. We talked about it earlier. I think that now they've got to see how much ceiling they have with him at quarterback. They've seen what Flacco can deliver. It's been unimpressive. This is the chance to will usher in the Lamar Jackson era.
Well, you know, the last time that Flacco was relevant for the Ravens was winning the Super Bowl in 2012.
Yep.
He has been underwhelming ever since then. You look at his numbers this season, 12 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. That's an 84 QBR. That's not pretty when you're 33 years old and you've had this much experience in the league. So I think his days are over.
Well, and the comment from Michael Crabtree yesterday.
Oh, that was such an advertisement for Lamar Jackson.
He said it's basically the Lamar show. So that's a big endorsement from a veteran wide receiver on that team.
You know, and people can say, critics can say, well, yeah, it was the Raiders. But nonetheless, you got to take care of business when you can take care of business.
Right.
Win the games you should win.
Right.
And everyone should win.
Especially taking care of the business in the way in which they did. That
game
was just,
It was decisive. It was never in question. And that's the way to do it.
You know, on the Raiders side, Derek Carr took a beating yesterday, had to leave the game twice. If he is, in fact, the future and there's no team around him, he's sort of one of those quarterbacks. I look at him and I say, well, I'd just like to put him on ice and not let him get beat up this year. You don't want Derek Carr turning into David Carr.
Oh, the Texans ruined his career.
Yeah, David Carr's career ruined by a lack of protection. He never really got any momentum. Too beat up. And you'd hate to see the same fate for Derek Carr.
Well, the only thing that gives me a little bit of hope, so Carr has been sacked this season, a career high for him, 35 times.
Yep.
But Dak, your buddy, Dak Prescott, who is turning it around and looking so good, has had the third most sacks in the NFL at 38.
Right, right.
And he's come around. So.
Yeah, it just strikes me. When you look at Dak Prescott, the eye test, Dak seems like a big,
strong, physical guy.
He looks like a Cam Newton, a Ben Roethlisberger, one of these big quarterbacks. Derek Carr does not. He seems sort of small and very thin and much more vulnerable to injury.
Yeah. And what are you thinking about your boys?
Well, Cowboys with a great win over Thanksgiving.
Goodness.
Obviously a big division rival game against the Redskins. Cowboys now tied for first with the Redskins. And I'll say that they've seemed to have found a formula. They're running the ball exceedingly well with Elliott. Amari Cooper has been what they'd hoped he would be.
Oh, wow.
I mean,
that's been
frankly,
a great pickup.
You know, there was a lot of heat for Jerry Jones and the Cowboys for giving up a number one to bring Amari Cooper onto that team. They needed Amari to have a big outing, and he had two great long catch and runs.
A 90-yard TD.
And one of these things that when you look at the stat sheet, it looks like Prescott threw a 90-yard touchdown pass. Really, both of the long...
It was a 10-yard pass, and he broke a tackle.
Well, there it is. So
it's beautiful.
You have Amari with great runs after the catch, and that was what was most notable. The other thing I'd say about Amari Cooper is he really seems to be running great routes.
He's a great route runner. That's his strength.
He's an exceptional route runner. The moves he placed on those cornerbacks, very, very exceptional. And then he had the speed to break away. So, I mean, it depends on how you look at it. But Cooper not only is a good receiver, but he's opening up things in the running lanes because now you can't bring all those defenders up into the box. Cowboys offense seems to have a little more life to them with Amari Cooper in the lineup.
And Jason Garrett can thank Cooper, Prescott, and Elliott for saving his job on Thanksgiving.
Well, as a longstanding Cowboys fan, there is this notion in the air that, well, the Cowboys need to clean house. They need a new head coach. But with Cooper on the team, they're just good enough to keep Garrett around for another year. look, the Cowboys aren't going to the Super Bowl in a conference that includes teams like the Saints.
They're blessed with the NFC East division.
I mean, yes, right. The Cowboys might well win their division, but when you get to the Saints and the Rams, Cowboys just aren't in that league. They're really not in the league with the Bears and the Vikings, I think. But Saints and Rams are far and away the best teams in that conference, and Cowboys won't fare well in the playoffs.
You know what's interesting about that? I wonder, and I beg to differ with you, if they really are in that league under the right coach. Because look at this. If I said to you, okay, hey, here's my team.
Yep.
I've got Dak Prescott at quarterback. I've got Ezekiel Elliott at running back. I have Amari Cooper as my number one receiver. I have a really good offensive line, not the same as it was,
sure,
you know, a year or two ago. And my defense is playing lights out.
Yep.
Would you think that they would be struggling to, like, get to the top of the NFC East? Like, really, when you take all of that into consideration, they are playing well now. I will give you that, and I love watching them, you know, get better and better. But they should already be there with what we just talked about.
All right, when we come back, we'll diagnose what is going to hold the Cowboys back when we return here on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Oh, man, when we went to break, it was a raging debate about the fate of the Cowboys. There is a lot to like about that team. The defense is playing really well. The O-line is certainly above average still. Amari's now on that team. They've opened up some lanes for Ezekiel Elliott. My concerns are twofold. One is I don't know that Scott Linehan is the innovative offensive coordinator that they need or want. I blame some of that on Jason Garrett. But I'm concerned about Dak Prescott as well. My observations, he holds the ball a long time. He does lead the league in sacks, and a lot of it is holding onto the ball too long. And secondly, when you look at his completions, it's nearly always the same kind of pass. It's about a 10-yard completion. It's Beasley on an option route. It was Witten on an option route. He hadn't shown the ability to consistently throw the ball over the top deep or to throw that strike, that 20 to 25-yard dig route that Aikman threw to Irvin so well over the years.
Well, you know what? His character is top of the line. He's got that locker room. He's a leader. You can't teach that. They need someone to develop his skill.
Yeah.
Because he's got the skill.
He's
it's raw.
Early in his career. This
and
is
he's
year
got
three.
A great line.
It's year three.